Penguin Random House Audio presents Gender and Our Brains. How New Neuroscience Explodes the Myths of the Male and Female Minds by Gina Rippon. Read for you by Hannah Curtis. Few tragedies can be more extensive than the stunting of life, few injustices deeper than the denial of an opportunity to strive or even to hope. By a limit imposed from without, but falsely identified as lying within. Stephen Jay Gould, The Mismeasure of Man. Introduction, Whack-a-Mole Myths. This book is about an idea that has its roots in the 18th century and still persists today. That is the notion that you can sex a brain, that you can describe a brain as male or female, and that you can attribute any differences between individuals in behavior, abilities, achievements, personality, even hopes and expectations, to the possession of one or the other type of brain. It is a notion that has inaccurately driven brain science for several centuries, underpins many damaging stereotypes, and, I believe, stands in the way of social progress and equality of opportunity. The question of sex differences in the brain is one that has been debated, researched, encouraged, criticized, praised, and belittled for over 200 years, and can certainly be found in different guises for long before that. It is an area of entrenched opinion, and has been the ongoing focus of just about every research discipline, from genetics to anthropology, mixed with history, sociology, politics and statistics. It is characterized by bizarre claims. Women's inferiority comes from their brains being 5 ounces lighter, which can readily be dismissed, only to pop up again in another form. Women's inability to read maps comes from wiring differences in the brain. Sometimes a single claim lodges itself firmly in the public consciousness as a fact, and despite the best efforts of concerned scientists, remains a deeply entrenched belief. It will be frequently referred to as a well-established fact and triumphantly re-emerge to trump arguments about sex differences, or more worryingly, to drive policy decisions. I think of these seemingly endlessly recurring misconceptions as whack-a-mole myths. Whack-a-mole is an arcade game, which involves repeatedly hitting the heads of mechanical moles with a mallet as they pop up through holes in a board. Just when you think you've dispatched them all, another pesky mole pops up elsewhere. The term whack-a-mole is used nowadays to describe a process where a problem keeps recurring after it is supposedly fixed, or any discussion where some type of mistaken assumption keeps popping up despite it supposedly having been dispatched by new and more accurate information. In the context of sex differences, this might be the belief that newborn baby boys prefer to look at tractor mobiles rather than human faces. The men are born to be scientists, mole. Or that there are more male geniuses and more male idiots. The greater male variability, mole. Truths such as these have, as we shall see in this book, been variously whacked over the years, but can still be found in self-help manuals, how-to guides, and even in 21st century arguments about the utility or futility of diversity agendas. And one of the oldest and apparently hardiest of moles is the myth of female and male brains. The so-called female brain has suffered centuries of being described as undersized, underdeveloped, evolutionarily inferior, poorly organized, and generally defective. Further indignities have been heaped upon it as being the cause of women's inferiority, vulnerability, emotional instability, scientific ineptitude, making them unfit for any kind of responsibility, power, or greatness. Theories about women's inferior brains emerged long before we were actually able to study the human brain, other than when it was damaged or dead. Nevertheless, blame the brain was a consistent and persistent mantra when it came to finding explanations for how and why women were different from men. In the 18th and 19th centuries, it was generally accepted that women were socially, intellectually, and emotionally inferior. In the 19th and 20th centuries, the focus shifted to women's supposedly natural roles as carers, mothers, womanly companions of men. The message has been consistent. There are essential differences between men's and women's brains, and these will determine their different capacities and characters and their different places in society. Even though we could not test these assumptions, they remained the bedrock on which stereotypes were firmly and immutably grounded. But at the end of the 20th century, the advent of new forms of brain imaging technology offered the possibility that we could, at last, find out if there were really any differences between the brains of women and those of men, where they might come from, and what they might mean for the brain's owners. You might think that the possibilities offered by these new techniques would be seized on as game changers in the arena of research into sex differences and the brain. The development of powerful and sensitive ways for studying the brain, together with a chance to reframe a centuries-old quest for differences, should be revolutionising the research agenda and galvanising discussion in media outlets. If only that were the case. Several things went wrong in the early days of sex differences and brain imaging research. With respect to sex differences, there was a frustrating backward focus on historical beliefs in stereotypes, termed neurosexism, by psychologist Cordelia Fine. Studies were designed based on the go-to list of the robust differences between females and males, generated over the centuries, or the data were interpreted in terms of stereotypical female-male characteristics, which may not have even been measured in the scanner. If a difference was found, it was much more likely to be published than a finding of no difference, and it would also breathlessly be hailed as an at-last-the-truth moment by an enthusiastic media. Finally, the evidence that women are hardwired to be rubbish at map reading and that men can't multitask. The second difficulty with early brain imaging research was the images themselves. The new technology produced wonderfully colour-coded brain maps that gave the illusion of a window into the brain, the impression that this was an image of the real-time workings of this mysterious organ, now available for inspection by all. These seductive images have fed a problem which I have called neurotrash, the sometimes bizarre representations or misrepresentations of brain imaging findings that appear in the popular press and in piles of brain-based self-help books. These books and articles are frequently illustrated with beautiful brain maps, which are considerably less frequently accompanied by any kind of explanation of what such maps are really showing. Understanding the differences between women and men has been a particular target for such manuals or headlines, bringing us apparently enlightening links to crowbars, polka dots and clams, and, of course, compounding the idea that men are from Mars, women are from Venus. So the advent of brain imaging at the end of the 20th century did not do much to advance our understanding of alleged links between sex and the brain. Here in the 21st century, are we doing any better? New ways of looking at the brain focus on connections between structures rather than just the size of the structures themselves. Neuroscientists today have started decoding the brain's chatter, the way in which different frequencies of brain activity seem to pass on messages and bring back answers. We are getting better models of how the brain does what it does, and we are beginning to have access to huge data sets, so comparisons can be made and models can be tested using hundreds, if not thousands, of brains, rather than the handfuls that were available previously. Could these advances shed any light on the vexed question of the myth or the reality of the female and the male brain? One major breakthrough in recent years has been the realization.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?